views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Spirit Fire Radio. I am joined here with my co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hello, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve.
It's been a wonderful month. This week, we get the extra treat of a fifth week. So we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to have a guest on our show in a few minutes. But in the meantime, let's just talk a little bit about hope. We've covered it for 4 weeks. I'd love to hear some of your thoughts, Dorothy. We've gotten really deeply to the core of hope and the way it can contribute and the way it's an aspect of our spiritual life. What comes to mind for you when you think of hope?
Well, I think what's been central to me in these discussions is the fact that hope is not only that positive attitude, but the willingness to be persistent in finding different avenues to bring about an outcome that is for the common good, not just for me individually, but for the common good. So it's that combination of optimism and persistence, not just wishful thinking, that is so critical. And I've got a couple of quotes I'd like to share, Steve.
Wonderful.
Help summarize what we've been talking about. The first one, these are both from Father James Keller. The first one is, hope cherishes no illusions, nor does it yield to cynicism. And I think that that's really interesting in relation to what we were talking about last week when we were talking about glamour and illusion and the way that they interfere with being hopeful because they distort what our reality is. It's like you're looking through a glass that's been damaged and it's got all these, you know, different cracks and stuff that you're not seeing clearly what's going on.
And we've talked quite a bit about separation, this idea of separation and what that does to hope. So you can see that sort of cynicism and criticism, it's what you've got to look out for. You know, you've really got to look out for are they present in your life, because they really sort of do dampen the space and they don't leave much room for hope.
That's right. That's right. And so the second quote carries on from there. It says, hope discovers what can be done instead of grumbling about what cannot. So that relates to the whole idea of focus, you know, and the idea that we create our own reality by the focus of our thoughts, that we literally manifest what it is that we focus on.
Yeah, I think of activists a lot. We have had a lot of quotes from peacemakers and activists of sort, and people who have really created change. And hope seems to be always an aspect, you know, of trailblazing, you know, of widening boundaries and of setting new precedents. You know, it seems to be expansive in every way, and that's why it's a spiritual concept. That's a lovely quote, grumbling about what cannot be. Yes, hope definitely discovers, and that's what sticks to mind in my mind, is this sense of discovery, that there's a sense of wonder and expansion, and you can feel your mind sort of light up when you hear those words, and that's what really those were the ahas with me, that hope isn't an emotion, that, oh, I really hope I pass that test, that really within that is a sense of worry and, oh, it might not really happen, but to be hopeful and to bring the mind stuff in there, to be creative and create options. So I love that there's that word discover in there, that hope discovers.
And it means that we have the responsibility to hold the vision of what is possible for humanity and to be working towards that in a very constructive manner. And I think that both of our organizations are focused on helping people do that. You know, we might just take a moment, Steve, to mention that this is a collaboration between the School for Esoteric Studies and Spiritfire, both of whom are educational organizations, both of whom focus on training through meditation, study, and service, and both of whom are focused on practical applications of spiritual concepts.
Sounds hopeful. I couldn't have put it better myself. Indeed, Spiritfire is so happy to be working with the School for Esoteric Studies. And I personally am so happy to be here with you each week. You know, we really talk about various ways that we can generate, really that we can generate hope. What we're talking about is ways that we can use spiritual concepts in our everyday lives. So we hope that you listeners, that we're creating options for you and that you're feeling hopeful after our shows. It's really fun. I wanted to mention that our guest today is Rabbi Rami Shapiro. And I had mentioned last week that I was reading an article on Spirituality and Health. And Spirituality and Health is just this really great magazine. We have it here at the Retreat Center. So Spiritfire has a meditative retreat center. And he's got a really wonderful column. He is a columnist, and we're going to bring him on in a minute. But within that magazine, they had these archetypes of the positively audacious, and the audacity of hope. President Obama's book came up quite a bit in all of our discussions. And they were talking about these archetypes that are positively audacious. And I just thought a few of them were interesting, like the champion, the pioneer, the warrior, the innovator, and the peacemaker. So again, we think of being audacious as breaking down boundaries and pushing limits and expanding. So both of our organizations certainly are sort of, we'd like to think of ourselves as spiritual space makers, creating options for people. So I sort of love that, being audacious, that goes along with hope.
Absolutely.
So, Dorothy, let's go to a quick break, and then that'll give us a bit more time to talk to Rabbi Rami Shapiro. I believe he is in waiting for us, and we'll be right back and introduce him. And we're going to talk about his contributions, and indeed, we're going to talk about his column, which is called Roadside Assistance for the Spiritual Traveler. And we'll be right back with Dorothy Riddle, Rabbi Rami Shapiro, and myself.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
want to help reduce the divisiveness in our world? Each year, the School for Esoteric Studies holds a subjective group conference. This year, our focus is on unity in diversity, the science of right human relations. From April till June, we will meditate together, study relevant writings, and share practical strategies for improving how we relate with each other. Join us to help build inclusive communities. Check on our subjective group conference at esotericstudies.net. That's the School for Esoteric Studies at esotericstudies.net.
Are you looking for the perfect setting for your next workshop or retreat? At Spirit Fire Meditative Retreat Center, cultivating consciousness is what we do best. Our guests count on us to create an atmosphere that supports serenity and well-being. We lead from the heart and create space for the mind. Freshly prepared meals designed with local and organic ingredients, 95 acres of beautiful woods and pastures, and a facility built with green in mind. This is what you'll find at Spirit Fire. For more information, visit spiritfireretreatcenter.com.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
Hello, welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. As I said before we went to break, we have a guest on our show today, and I'm so excited to speak with him. First and foremost, I love his column. He's got a column in Spirituality and Health, which is a wonderful magazine, and we've got it littered all over. That is not litter. It is littered, so to speak, all over our retreat center, and people just love reading his column, which is called Roadside Assistance for the Spiritual Traveler. We are joined with Rabbi Rami Shapiro. Welcome, Rami.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
So if I can just tell our listeners a little bit about you, you're an award-winning author, you're a teacher, a speaker, and lots of books. Your latest book, could you tell us a little bit about your latest book?
So the latest book is The World Wisdom Bible. It's an anthology of teachings from seven traditions: Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, Confucianism, and Taoism. Teachings that really focus on what I call the perennial wisdom, which is a four point, and I can define that for you, but it's got four points in it, and every religion at its mystic core, I think, shares these four points. And very briefly, the four points are: one, that everything is a manifesting of the one thing, whether you call it God or Brahman or nature or mother or whatever your term for it is. It is the only reality, and each of us and every being is a manifesting of that. Number two, that human beings have a capacity to know this to be true directly. You don't need a revelation from a book or anything like that. You don't need a religion to reveal it to you. It's something that we are intrinsically capable of knowing through contemplative practice. Three, when you know it, it carries an ethical commitment to universal justice and compassion toward all beings. And four, that this is really the reason you exist, that the highest human striving is to realize the non-duality of all reality and to live out the ethic that that realization carries. So the World Wisdom Bible speaks to that truth through a variety of texts. And our goal is to, and we do it in two ways, but our goal is to get the Bible into as many hands as possible at no cost. So our original inspiration were the Gideons, who managed to place Gideon Bibles in every hotel drawer you know, on the planet. And our motto is Move Over Gideon. We want to put this interfaith text next to Gideon Bibles. And we do that by people donating money. And we have hotels who are willing, or retreat centers like yours that are willing to take them. And the second way we do it is through a program called Cup of Wisdom. And that's a salon-based idea that people would host these in their homes. And we send whoever the host would be, we send them a box of 10 mugs that with the Cup of Wisdom logo on it and 10 copies of the World Wisdom Bible and a leadership guide, in the hopes that they will then, you know, invite their friends over once a week, once a month, whatever they want to do, and work their way through the World Wisdom Bible and have conversations around it. What, you know, what do you think it means?
Wow. Beautiful. Beautiful. I love that this word perennial wisdom, you may not know this, but this show itself is a collaboration. So I'm hearing a lot about collaboration in your words as well. And that's such a meaningful word. And one we talk quite a bit about on this show, but this whole radio show is a collaboration between two educational nonprofit organizations. So I think it's lovely that you are one of the creators of a similar foundation. I don't know if you said it or not, the One River Foundation, just in case the listeners want to know. But both of our organizations are steeped in what is we would refer to as the ageless wisdom. So I find it interesting that we have that connection, perennial wisdom and ageless wisdom. And both of them seem to be saying the same thing. So it's interesting that we all are sort of coming from this collective, that there is a root source of our spiritual traditions. I love that.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that this is a specific time in human evolution, if you want, or human history, where this perennial wisdom, this ancient timeless wisdom is reappearing in a variety of formats, and not just spiritual. I think science is reconnecting with this wisdom as well. They might use different language to articulate it, but I think that science in this case and spirituality along the lines of this perennial wisdom are in sync, not in conflict.
Well, I find it. Oh, go on, Dorothy.
Yeah, to me, that one of the really interesting things is that the findings of quantum physics are very much supporting the concepts that are, you know, what you're talking about, Rami, what I would talk about in terms of the ageless wisdom, the idea that we are all part of one whole, we are all interconnected, that what we do, we are energetic beings. And what we do energetically, how we think, how we behave, affects the entire universe in some way or another. And so we have a responsibility, not just to ourselves, but to that whole.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something, I mean, let me get your take on this. For me, once you know the interconnectedness, the ethic just follows axiomatically, that you don't need someone to say, you must. I have no alternative but to live in that ethical way, because the reality of our interconnectedness makes it impossible to do anything else.
Well, this is Dorothy. I would take a bit of a different slant on that. I think that ideally that's what would happen, but I actually have a book out called Positive Harmlessness in Practice, because what I became keenly aware of, I think, is that we don't have a shared experience of what it means to live harmlessly. We are told in many spiritual traditions what not to do, but we are not told what to do in order to live that ethic, to live that harmlessness.
Oh, so your book goes into specifics.
That's right.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I didn't mean everyone knew what to do. I just meant they had that principle that they couldn't avoid. But yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, because you can have the concept that this is something that you believe in, but unless you have some practical application, and unless you have practices to undo behaviors that you've learned that are harmful, it's very difficult to move forward.
Yeah, very, very well put. What's the name of the book?
positive harmlessness in practice.
Is that your term? Did you make that up?
Yes, because I wanted it to be clear that it is a proactive process.
Yeah, it's a nice
positiveness. Yeah,
nice. Nice name, positive harmlessness.
I might add in that it's part of a series of books, and I just want to bring up the title because it's so interesting. It's called Enough for Us All. So if you're looking at for those books, there's a website, Dorothy, right? Enoughforusall.com. And we've been talking about hope, so we are talking about generating sort of optimism and creating specifics, creating ways in which that we can create options for ourselves and looking to that. So I love that even the whole series of your books, Dorothy, that it speaks of abundance and enough for us all is really a concept that you love and support and speak of regularly.
So what do you think? I mean, I don't know where you want the conversation to go, and I'm willing to shut up here, but I love the idea, and I love what you and Dorothy are saying. And then I can't help but, the question comes to mind. So why don't, I mean, yes, there is enough for us all, but why don't we live that way on a planetary level? Why are we obsessed with this notion that the pie is fixed? And that if I want more, someone else is going to have to get less. I mean, just look at the new, they call it that skinny budget that the Trump administration just put out. I mean, it's based on this notion that there's not enough to go around. And if the wealthy are going to get, their giant piece of the pie, there's a lot of people in this country who are going to go with much less than they had, before. Why do you think people can't see the ethic that goes with this interconnectedness?
I think that's an excellent question. And to me, part of the answer has to do with where one's focus is. If one's focus is at the individual level, and if one buys, and we have all of these illusions, and glamours floating around, if one believes that the way that one demonstrates that I've made it is to have more. And the advertising industry really reinforces this. More is better, new is better. Then you're going to consume. And that is a dynamic that creates competition. If instead you believe that there is, a role for modesty, if you want to put it that way, for sufficiency as opposed to as much as I possibly can, if you are engaged in, I just think of some of the dynamics that are going on right now, like the tiny homes, right, where you have a very small footprint, and that's enough. If you believe that what is most important is that everybody benefits, then you work in that way. So I think it's a matter of is your focus on the common good? Is your focus on your own individual, what you believe, I think incorrectly, to be your individual benefit?
Yeah. Well, I like what you said. I think that we are trained, I would suggest even from our earliest toddler period, if not before that, not to think in terms of the common good. And certainly if you're bringing up, capitalism and consumerism and the advertising industry, it's not just that more is better. It's that whatever you've got, no matter how much you've got, it's never enough. And you've always got the wrong thing. You only have an iPhone 6. What is the matter with you?
I know. I think that reality TV also plays a role.
Yeah.
This idea of entitlement, right? That I'm entitled to have this fancy home. I'm entitled with no effort on my part. The link between effort and what happens also gets broken, as well as the link between self and the whole.
Yeah. I wonder if hope has a connection to this notion of interdependence. that if you really see yourself as isolated, the pie is fixed, I've got to get as much as I can. I wonder if, no matter what kind of spin an individual might put on it, if she or he doesn't at root feel somewhat hopeless, even if they've got a big...
Yeah, you would have to.
There's research showing that people who are very wealthy feel that they don't have enough.
Yeah, right. Isn't that bizarre?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, and I grew up in rural India, and I grew up in village India where people had, by U.S. standards, very, very little. And yet they had excellent interpersonal relationships. They were part of a vibrant community, and they felt hopeful about their future, and all was good. Didn't have to do with the material.
Right, right. But here, I think, I mean, I'm oversimplifying, and perhaps we could oversimplify life in India as well. But certainly, given the fact that I'm oversimplifying, I don't think that we have that sense at all, that we're really trained not to. I mean, life is good. That's a company. That's a logo. That's a brand for all those T-shirts and all those hats. I mean, again, how ironic that this really deeply philosophical position is just used to sell hats.
Well, it really does come down to capitalism in a way. I mean, because the focus is on materialism, and then the focus is on me. It's a focus on desire. Yeah. It's a focus on what I have and what I want. And all of that is very me-driven. It's very personality-driven. I know that all of our work in the world of wisdom is really beyond that, right? It is the realm of the soul, and it is the realm of beyond just the personal self. So while we're trapped in materialism and we're trapped in things, we're trapped in desire, and they simply go hand in hand. Listen, this is a wonderful conversation. I can't wait to continue it, but we've got to go to a break. So listeners, we'll be right back after this.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
What if your body and mind were the compasses to the secrets, mysteries, and magic of life? Glenna Rice, co-host of The Questionable Parent, is inviting you to access all that is possible. Glenna is a 10-year certified veteran access consciousness facilitator who offers an amazing variety of life-changing classes and workshops. Work with Glenna from anywhere, with teleclasses and workshops all over the globe. To learn more and see Glenna's current schedule of events, classes, and workshops, visit glennarice.com.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Awareness is universal. Establishing a living awareness through meditation brings peaceful, healthy, and creative well-being into your everyday life. The practice of living awareness, Spiritfire's own meditation practice, is built on this belief and is designed for every level of practitioner. Each year, Spiritfire hosts living awareness meditation retreats that allow you to explore the practice in depth at our retreat center in beautiful Western Massachusetts. Introduce yourself to meditation and the practice at the Foundations Retreat, attend, in silence, a silent meditation retreat focused on mindfulness, presence, and nature, or be engaged with the meditation sittings themselves at the deepening retreat. Start adding to your awareness and attend a meditation retreat designed to cultivate consciousness in your everyday life. For details on attending a Living Awareness meditation retreat, visit upcoming events at www.spiritfire.com.
Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. We are having a wonderful time talking to our guest this week, who is Rabbi Rami Shapiro. So to our listeners, I would love to tell you about his website. You can go to rabbirami.com. And I would suggest that you go there because there is some really wonderful, interesting information. And what's most wonderful is the quote, Rami, that is on the front page of your website. Do you mind if I read that to our listeners?
No, go ahead.
I love it because it rings true for so much that we have been talking about thus far in the wonderful conversation that's been taking place. So it says, and I quote, this is a quote from Rami, "To me, religions are like languages. No language is true or false. All languages are of human origin. Each language reflects and shapes the civilization that speaks it. There are things you can say in one language that you cannot say or say as well in another. And the more languages you learn, the more nuanced your understanding of life becomes. Judaism is my mother tongue, yet in matters of spirit, I strive to be multilingual. In the end, however, the deepest language of the soul is silence." That's beautiful.
Well, thank you.
I love that you are multilingual. And so that just leads me to ask a couple things. I'd love to, first of all, ask you about silence. Well, I'd like to ask you about silence at some point, but I see that Judaism is your mother tongue. And so I'm curious about the rabbi. You sort of pool the wisdom from so many spiritual traditions. It's interesting that you are a rabbi, and that's right there on your name, rabbirami.com. Do you find in any way that people have assumptions, or that limits you in any way, or that's just not an issue?
Well, I think people definitely have assumptions, which is why I love using the title, because then I can break their assumptions of what
exactly
a rabbi is. But I went into, it's a 5-year rabbinic training program. I went to Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati, Ohio, first in Jerusalem, but then ended up in Cincinnati, Ohio to finish. And I went there specifically to search for that perennial wisdom that I had found earlier in Buddhism and in Hinduism. And I said, this has to be in my own tradition. And I sought it out and was lucky enough to have teachers who could help me find it. So I sought out the rabbinic title in order to teach this perennial truth or this ageless wisdom to Jews, which, I do to some extent, and I did formally with a synagogue for 20 years, but eventually my rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi said, essentially, enough with the Jews. You have to bring, rather than bringing this perennial wisdom to Jewish people, bring the Jewish version of perennial wisdom to other people who might be interested in it. And that led me more into the interfaith world and the work on the World Wisdom Bible.
Beautiful.
But, it is my native tongue. When I'm looking to articulate what I believe, I always use Jewish language.
And I may be, correct me, I could be wrong, I might not know, but the word Bible, I find it interesting that it's the World Wisdom Bible. And what was behind that?
Marketing.
Okay.
Right? And the subtitle is A New Testament for, I forgot the title, but what it says underneath, a New Testament for Human Spirituality. These are all... everything is driven by Amazon algorithms. So the publisher finds, Bible's a good word. It comes up really fast. And wisdom is a good word. And testament is a good word. It's whether we like it or not, we are either consciously and certainly, and also sometimes unconsciously, driven by the algorithms of the people who control the data on the planet. So that's Facebook, Google, and Amazon. So that's why the word was chosen. They thought it would sell more books.
Get the good word out, right?
That's it.
Well, beautiful. So I just can't wait to talk about your column, only because that is one way in which you get the good word out. And we've been talking about hope for this whole month. And one interesting thing that has come up again and again is that when we've got options, when we create options and we mix that with optimism, that hope naturally arises. And we've talked quite a bit about hope not being an emotion, but hope is actually a state of mind. It's a state of being. It's actually an aspect of our reality. And we just have to create the environment that allows for hope to arise. And so I love your column. We have guests here who know your column well, that come through the retreat center. And it's just lovely to get to talk to you about roads side assistance for the spiritual traveler to our listeners. That's Rabbi Rami's column in Spirituality and Health. So I saw you a bit as a hope generator. You know, there's columnists who has people reach out to you for options, and you know, you give them really quite frank. You know, you are really matter of fact, and boy, the truth comes right through. And I can see that you know, you create clarity often around the questions, and I'm just curious. Where does that come from? You know, where does the inspiration and the wisdom, are you opening the World Wisdom Bible and skimming through the pages with every question? Because there's certainly in every issue, there's six, seven, eight questions. Where does the wisdom come from?
Well, I don't know. I mean, honestly, whatever wisdom you can find in there, that's just grace. I can't say these are, you know, it comes from me because I'm so wise. I think that the problems that people send me, the questions that people ask me, are not in the specifics that they come to me, but they're really the same questions and problems I ask of myself or that I experience myself. So when I read the questions that are sent, I personalize them all. Say, okay, so if this were me, you know, you could start each question with, well, if this were my problem, and then I clarify it for myself, and then I say, okay, so what are my options? So it's very personal to me what I write in there. And I, from the very beginning, I made the decision to answer as many questions as possible in the 1,000 words that the column takes up. I know you can read other Q&A columns where they answer one question, maybe two. But it seemed to me that if you were coming to me and say, here, I got this issue, we don't have a lot of time to discuss it. You're not going to come back week to week to discuss your problem. I'm not a therapist. You're a rabbi. You want an opinion. So bam, I've got to do it really fast. So I try to keep each answer very short, which means I have to be very concise, which means I have to cut out all the BS that I would normally fill my brain with if it was my problem. So I have to, okay, I get it. This is personal to me and to the questioner. Now let me strip it down to its essence. And then what comes up when I strip it down? And that's where the answer comes from. It's when I really try to put my back against, have my back against the wall, face the question in as raw a form as I can imagine it, and then see what comes up. And to me, I just want to take a little bit further in a little different direction, in this hope direction, because the way I understand hope is maybe in the original meaning of the term, which was a sense of trust. And I have this sense of trust that if we really do face the crises that we have in our lives in this bald way without hiding, I trust that answers come up, that, like you said, options come up. And sometimes not even options. You just know what to do. You know, Krishnamurti's choiceless awareness. It's no longer an option. It's, now that I really see what I'm up against, this is the only response to take. And I trust that the universe is so designed that, at least for humans, that if I can face it that baldly, again, to use that term, without any distraction, then I don't know about the truth, but an answer, a useful, meaningful, valuable answer will arise.
And that's the deepest language of the soul being silence, correct?
Yeah, well, no, that's a very, I hadn't thought of it, but yeah, absolutely. I have to, that's really interesting. I have to be silent in the face of that question and then see what comes up. Because if I answer it, you know, from the egoic point of view, because the whole thing, to have a Q&A column is very egocentric, you know, to begin with, like you're asking me, what do I know? But, you know, I get paid to pretend I know. So the best way to deal with that is to really enter into, or to be, let me make it even more radical, to be, not to enter into silence, but to be pushed into silence by the rawness of the question. And just to realize that I don't have an answer until an answer appears. And I work on these, each one, I work on them a long time before I'm ready to say, okay, this is what I would say and publish it.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
So, Rami, this is Dorothy. Let me frame that slightly differently and see if we're on the same page or if I'm not reflecting what you're saying. Because what I would say in terms of the training that we provide in the School for Esoteric Studies, for example, we one of the disciplines that we are helping our students develop is the ability to almost channel, to connect with the energetic field, the intuitive knowledge of the one life without distortion, so that it comes through very clearly. And so there's a silence of the personality, right? There's a stillness, there's a clarity. I think of it as if you're taking a photograph with a kind of traditional camera, that you things come into very, very clear, crisp focus. It's that silence that's just right there. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't usually use the word channel, but no, I agree 100%.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but we just have to go to a break, and that will give you some time to ponder that. And Dorothy, perhaps when we come back, just rephrase that quickly, but we've got to go to a break. And this conversation has been so good. It's going very quickly. We'll be right back just after this break.
Tune in to Dynamics of Diversity Radio, scripting the new narrative for immigration with leading experts Kripa Upadhyay and Steve Tanijo on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will remove the noise that often accompanies discussions on this topic and share a new perspective on the dynamics of immigration and diversity, ever reminding us that together we are all at the core of innovation, excellence, and positive change. Visit OrbitLawPLLC.com for upcoming topics.
Awareness is universal. Establishing a living awareness through meditation brings peaceful, healthy, and creative well-being into your everyday life. The practice of living awareness, Spiritfire's own meditation practice, is built on this belief and is designed for every level of practitioner. Each year, Spiritfire hosts living awareness meditation retreats that allow you to explore the practice in depth at our retreat center in beautiful Western Massachusetts. Introduce yourself to meditation and the practice at the Foundation's retreat. Attend, in silence, a silent meditation retreat focused on mindfulness, presence, and nature. Or be engaged with the meditation sittings themselves at the Deepening Retreat. Start adding to your awareness and attend a meditation retreat designed to cultivate consciousness in your everyday life. For details on attending a Living Awareness Meditation Retreat, visit upcoming events at www.spiritfire.com.
Gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher Sarah Luce brings her unique style to the hit show Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit saraluce.com. That's SARALOOS.com.
Want to help reduce the divisiveness in our world? Each year, the School for Esoteric Studies holds a subjective group conference. This year, our focus is on unity in diversity –
The Science of Right Human Relations. From April till June, we will meditate together, study relevant writings, and share practical strategies for improving how we relate with each other. Join us to help build inclusive communities. Check on our subjective group conference at esotericstudies.net. That's the School for Esoteric Studies at esotericstudies.net.
Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. And just before we get back into this wonderful conversation, I want to let our listeners know that this is the fifth week we've been talking about hope. And the month before we talked about humanity. So we are really taking these spiritual concepts and we're going very deep into them every month, one a month throughout the year. And next month we will be talking about right speech. We were just talking about the beautiful wisdom that can arise from silence, and from that silence usually comes speech. So we want to make sure that that speech is serving ourselves and serving the greater good and supporting us in every way. So for the next 4 weeks, we will be talking about right speech. So we hope you will join us. So let's return back to that conversation. It was really wonderful. Dorothy, do you just want to rephrase that question maybe a little bit to Rami?
Well, we were talking about the fact that in terms of what Romney you were talking about, we're really looking at the access that we have to the greater energy field. This is the way I would put it, that not only are we all part of our manifestations of the one, are we all part of this one cosmic energy field, which quantum physics has verified for us, but that in that field, there is knowledge that we can access of, you know, what is the most appropriate way forward. And the way that we access that is by learning to be silent within ourselves. And I use the word channel, that it has some connotations that I wouldn't agree with, but basically have that energetic flow come through without distortion.
Yeah, I agree. It's a real challenge to do that, because we want to identify that energetic field with our little egoic self, as opposed to let the self become silent and just listen to the field. But if you can let the self silence become silent, I think that the wisdom is right there. It's just that's the spirit. That's the challenge of the spiritual journey, I think, though not the way most people imagine it. I mean, the way it's marketed in the United States is the spiritual journey is just going to make you happier and healthier and wealthier and, you know, all of that. But that isn't really what it's about. And most people who are serious about it know that's not what it's about.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually, I think, part of how we access the options that are part of what hope is all about. You mentioned the choiceless awareness. And I think that there are some realms in which there is a choice. There is something that we must do. I think of, for myself, of this is mine to do. I am uniquely positioned and I must, in terms of the greater good, do this. But there are other times that in order to get where we need to go, we have to try a number of different things. And again, I think that those insights can come from that universal knowledge. So I'm wondering for yourself how you differentiate between the times when there is only one option going forward, and where, in terms of maintaining hopefulness, it's important to be persistent and keep trying different options.
Yeah, from me, and I may be wrong, but I may be existentially wrong about this. I may, you know, after the show is over and I think about it later, I go, no, that was wrong. So let me say it could be wrong right up front. For me, if I see multiple options, I have a sense that my ego is still in the way. That when it's, when I'm really out of the way, it seems to me that it's clear, this is what I must do. This is the right thing to do. But I'm hopeful in the sense that even if the ego is in the way, even there are multiple options and I choose one that turns out to be a dead end, I trust, using hope in that sense of a feeling of trust, I trust that I can learn from that and then get, you know, go in a different direction. Because, you know, sometimes it's just not clear, I guess. And so you say, well, I could do X, I could do Y, let me try Y. And it turns out Y was the wrong path. But for me, there is a lot of clarity that just comes through that silence. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I tend maybe to think, yeah, go ahead.
Maybe it's a level of focus because I know for myself in my life, I may have this very strong, clear sense that this is something that I must do, but there may be many different strategies that I need to try before I'm actually able to do that.
Oh, that's different. Yes, I agree to that 100%. Sure. Sure. And when I turn.
Persistence comes in at the trying different strategies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. I agree with that. When I turned 65, which was just 11 months ago or so. Yeah, 11 months ago. I had one of those, I don't know what you call this, sort of existential life things happen. And I said, geez, this is really the last segment of my life. And I want to, it has to mean something. And I don't want to just replicate what I've done before. And that's where the whole One River Foundation came from. And that's where the World Wisdom Bible came from. And it was incredibly clear and compelling that that's what I needed to do, but how to do it, the strategies, oh gosh, there were a million options and 99% of them were a mistake. So, but you learn from those mistakes, but the direction, I guess maybe that's one way to put it. The direction was choiceless, but the strategies, no, you're always experimenting.
I think that's a really good distinction, really helpful distinction.
Well, beautiful. You know, I, what I'm hearing in also in options is that there are multitude of ways. And I think that is so present in the fact that you have pulled texts and teachings from so many of the world's religions. So in a way, you're showing that from these multiplicities and from these so many ways of looking at the world, at life, at our evolution, that we can actually come to the one truth. But when we look at them, when we've got so many options, we've got many ways of looking at it in many different languages, that truth comes through in the end. I find that to be so hopeful. Rami, do you want to tell our listeners how they can take a look at your foundation, at the One River Foundation?
Sure, thanks. It's One River Foundation, all one word, one, O-N-E, riverfoundation.org. And you can see the different projects that we've got going there, the Bible, Cup of Wisdom Salons, Wisdom Schools that I run, and Holy Rascals, which is a creative way of engaging with your religious tradition. But yeah, oneriver.org.
Wonderful. Rascals, it sounds fun. So Perennial Wisdom, I love the sound of it, and I love the feel of it, and beautiful world, beautiful word, and a beautiful world. Dorothy, we just have a couple minutes left. Any final words on hope as we're at the end of this month in this theme?
Well, I believe that this the link I'd like to draw, which we talked about a little bit, I think last week, Steve, is that the emotion that comes with hope is joy. And joy is the basic note of our universe. It's not suffering. It's not pain. It's not, it has to hurt in order, you know, for us to learn. We have the possibility, and to me, this is fundamental in hope. We have the possibility of turning from reacting only to what's happening in our environment to purposefully choosing the actions that we will take that are in the common good, that will move us all forward. And therein is the hope for humanity.
beautifully said. We mentioned on the first segment of the first show, I remember us saying a beautiful quote by Desmond Tutu, which was, "Hope is being able to see that there is light despite all the darkness."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is present that we can count on. So, Rami, thank you so much for joining us. It was a really rich and wonderful conversation. We've got some new friends here. I have a sense that you and Dorothy have quite a bit in common. It was really a beautiful, rich conversation, and I love that you could join us and be a part of Spirit Fire Radio. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It was fabulous.
Wonderful. So we will be back next week, and we will be talking about right speech. You can see all of the topics that we'll be covering all year long on spiritfireradio.com. Thank you so much, Dorothy, again. It was a great conversation. And listeners, we will be back next week.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.